our childhoods. It's clear what we experience in our early years ultimately has an effect on our adulthood. Our early experiences shaping our beliefs about ourselves, others, and the world. Therefore, under healthy circumstances, we learn rules to protect our self-belief as it may make us vulnerable. In doing so, we form dysfunctional behaviors, distorting our sense of self-concept, which then can lead to mental health problems and antisocial personality disorders. In our last episode, author, wellness coach, and motivational speaker Angela Meyer shared how to uncover the secret to stopping verbal abuse that arises at the hand of a narcissistic abuser. We learn loving someone doesn't mean putting up with the arguments that attack your self-worth and basic rights. In heat of the moment, sometimes the things you say in an argument can be harmful. Yet when pushed to the brink of narcissistic abuse, we frequently snap, flipping the script, the abused finding themselves becoming the abuser. We find out how our verbal altercations with a narcissistic abuser often turn sour when we return to the light inside. In our younger, more unsophisticated days, things seemed relatively easy. Perhaps we simply didn't question much. In that nagging, often insecure feeling of doubt, we didn't seem to entertain it. We embraced the world with curiosity and grandeur, at least to the best of my recollection, full of both adventurous vigor and endless wonder. Nevertheless, many of the difficult behavior patterns that often surface throughout our lives, both implicitly and explicitly, are deeply rooted in our childhood. Explicit describes something that is very clear and without vagueness or ambiguity. Implicit often functions as the opposite, referring to something that is understood but not described clearly or directly, and often using assumption. Although it is often seen as not readily clear why certain people begin adopting narcissistic traits, one thing is fairly prominent. Our childhoods are deeply influential in nature. Angela, you mentioned in our last segment the importance parenting plays in developing our healthy self-concept. You know, we went a couple episodes back and looked at that area of that kind of vulnerable, anxious insecurity we often first experience as a child. We hold on to that, where it's characterized by hypersensitivity and sort of a need for defensiveness to feel safe.
Yes.
At the height of that, when we feel our most disempowered, we withdraw, we pull back, we shrink, becoming even more vulnerable in our emotionality and our feelings.
Yes, but when it's a narcissist, they want to feel powerful. Mm-hmm. They want to feel in control. And so that's where they use a person as a tool to feel that way. That's why they manipulate. That's why they gaslight. That's why they stonewall. So then they're more superior than you.
Mm-hmm. So in that regard, then we're shifting into that grandiose narcissism where they're trying to feel that sense of superiority again.
Yes. And even the covert can do the same exact thing, you know, to you, because they passively aggressively insulted you and now they feel better about themselves.
It's easy to see then where that sense of self-importance then becomes such a prominent feature, where we're trying to say simply, I matter because I lack that feeling of matter.
Right.
As I'm not feeling fulfilled in that, you know, I feel that need, you know, the necessity to control others, to then exert my sense of manipulation control to say, I will get what I need.
Yes. And they can either go about that a direct way or indirect way. And it's just knowing how to spot it, you know, how to spot it. And it's like, what are the behaviors? What are the traits? What are the signs? And And that's how we all get manipulated and taken advantage of, because we don't know the traits, we don't know the signs, we don't know the patterns, and we need to know them to keep ourselves safe and to keep our sanity.
I'm going to shift a little bit here, and this might be a reach, so I hope this doesn't become challenging to you as someone who's experienced narcissistic abuse, but I feel it warrants looking at. It's fascinating to observe how trait level grandiosity and vulnerability coexist in everyday people like you and me in many regards. We each display some level of narcissism throughout our interactions, yet we often form those stigmas about the narcissism that others display. You know, some days we each feel super pumped up about ourselves and ready to conquer the world. Somewhat of a grandiose narcissistic trait that becomes beneficial. I want to throw that in there for contrast so we can see how that interaction happens, that interplay. Yet there's other days where we ourselves shrink back and feel, you know, we've been conquered by the world, as after a breakup or a difficult day at work, that conflict we may have experienced with a significant other, and we kind of feel that vulnerable narcissistic trait that sometimes can arise. That tiptoes us up to those indirect and direct ways that we then communicate. You know, the question then arises. Go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out the question that that's
more of an aside. It's kind of an insight overview. Hoping to bridge where that line starts to gray, you know, how sometimes we just lump that ball of clay that says either you're narcissistic or you're not. This is the most extreme form. Yet there is that subtle shade of gray each of us casually tiptoes up to on occasion.
Well, let me see if I can answer this question the best way that I'm hearing it, or indirectly hearing it. Yeah, because it feels like it's indirectly hearing it. So there is, I believe it is healthy for everyone to have that sense of self-worth and a sense of self-pride and to have self-esteem, I believe, and confidence. All of that is healthy. All of that is positive, okay? And being a confident person is important. It is needed, because to me, everyone should be loved and accepted. Everyone should have a voice. There should be equality, all of that, okay? Where it becomes for me narcissistic is where I'm better than you. I'm more important than you. What I have to say is more important than you. What I think is more important than you. That is where it crosses the line to where it's not equality anymore. It's now split thinking. It's either you're with me or you're against me. And it's that wall of separation. And so I want people to have a sense of pride. I want people to value themselves and feel good and be happy and go about their life. And when you are that way, you're being kind to other people. You're showing mutual respect to other people. You're showing decency. But when it's someone that's narcissistic, they don't. The only time they do it is when they love bomb you because they want something from you. And when you have that healthy self-esteem and that healthy, you know, outlook on life, you're not trying to manipulate people. You're not trying to take advantage of people. You're embracing people for all their indifferences. That's why I say we're all perfectly imperfect. You're embracing everyone's imperfections. You're not shaming them or insulting them or making them feel like they're stupid or they're worthless. And so there's, you know, if I think I answered, hopefully I answered it correctly, but there is
that was a very vague question that simply asked, where might we step up into that shade of gray where we slip over the edge into those more covert areas of narcissism? So that's in hindsight now.
Okay. How you slip in that way is, it's okay. I'm going to give a perfect example. Let's say you became a celebrity and you go out to a restaurant and the waiter's not, you say to the waiter, "Don't you know who I am?" Mm. To me, that's narcissistic. I don't need to announce who
I am.
It's
very overt, and it's narcissism in many ways.
It is. I don't need to tell you who I am. I don't, you know, it's like, because I was raised, and I saw this recently, there was a meme I saw recently where some celebrities shaking the janitor's hand. And he said, I was raised to show respect to all people and all professions. And so, yes, I will shake, you know, the janitor's hand. I will wave at the garbage man. You know, I'm not going to think that just, you know, because I'm an accountant, I'm better than him. You know, I have one up on him. I mean, he has a job. He's got to put food on the table. So it's really, you know, that fine line area of mutual respect and common decency for everyone. And when you start to lose that, then maybe you need to do a reality check and be like, well, hey, I have been a little bit egotistical here. I let my career overshadow who I really am, or I won the lottery, and now, you know, I think I'm better than everyone else.
And there again, we're looking back to assessing by that five-factor model of personality. Personality not being permanent but transmutable,
right?
Yet we do have some kind of scaled models we can measure and monitor ourselves for self-regulation. I'm going to repeat that because that was a little bit confusing. I'm going to put that in our show notes where we actually list those five factor models so we can go back and kind of evidence together and compare notes on that. Looking at that aspect, I'm going to jump back just a second here in our conversation where you mentioned that celebrity saying, don't you know who I am? Sometimes that same sense of superiority, is it not also leveraged by everyday people like you and I in that same regard? Don't you know who I am? As a form of manipulation, a form of overpowering others.
Well, and it's really putting your ego out there. Yeah. It really is. Because it's the best way that I'm just popping in my head right now is, many of us were taught to respect our elders.
Yes.
We are. We're taught to respect our elders. And when it comes to an elder that gets disrespected, they're going to say, you know, hey, weren't you taught to respect your elders? Because they do have a lot more wisdom and a lot more life experience. And sometimes that young teenager person thinks that I know it all, because let's agree, they do believe they know it all, but they really don't know it all. They really don't. And it's hard sometimes. Yes. When you have to put someone in that position and you have to call them out on it. So spinning back to the celebrity, a lot of times it can be like they're seeking that extra attention. They're seeking that extra, like, well, because I am a celebrity, maybe my dinner should be for free.
Yeah.
You know, maybe because I am a celebrity.
Entitlement.
Yes. It's that sense of entitlement. And so I always believe with anyone, when you start to notice you're getting that sense of entitlement, you need to remind yourself, who do you really want to be? Do you want to be a self-entitled person, or do you really want to be someone that is kind and caring and is nice to, you know, just everyone, you know, wants equality? Because people can rub off on us. You know, you can have an agent that's really grooming you to be this self-entitled person. Mm. And who do you listen to? Because we can, all of us, we can lose our way in life. Let's just be honest here. We can lose our sense of self. Money can cloud our vision. Fame can cloud our vision. You know, all these things can make us take on certain traits and behaviors that we don't like and didn't like. We got to come back home to ourselves.
So circling back around to narcissistic abuse, isn't there very often a very real and palpable subtext that signals, don't you know what I might do to you? That segues toward that kind of manipulation of imposing physical violence, you know, seeping into domestic violence.
Yes. And it's really, really hard when you don't know who and what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You can seriously get hurt, because I know personally, hand on, that the person I was dealing with in that verbal reactive abuse situation did something that I never thought in my wildest dreams would happen, where they inflicted self-harm upon themselves and basically had me arrested for, honestly, for assault. And the officers were not aware of reactive abuse tactics. They were not aware that they, you know, someone narcissistic can flip the switch and then hurt themselves. We've seen this in movies. We've literally seen this stuff in movies where they will injure themselves and say, this person assaulted me, this person hurt me, I want them arrested. And it has so much damage on that person's self-esteem and self-worth. And so really learning about reactive abuse is so important, because there is the physical aspect, there is the verbal, you know, there's the mental, emotional, and it's how do you safeguard yourself from that? Because when you snap, it's you're going into the deep end and you lose your composure, you lose your sense of self. And for some people, a lot of times they say when you do snap, it is a form of PTSD because you've had so much abuse that it leads you up to breaking and snapping. And PTSD is a form of, you know, of trauma. And if you've had lots of abuse, when you can snap, you can also disassociate, where you completely check out. This self-protecting part of you comes out and lashes out at your abuser, and then you don't remember what happened. It's like you blacked out, and that becomes even more scary.
Circling this to data from W. Keith Campbell and various other research, typically, you know, we associate those who identify as male with being more prominently featuring narcissistic characteristics and traits, not to be inherently disempowering to the female gender. Yet, there's a very real threat often felt simply by that male presence. Somewhat of a conditioned dominance on top of that, that societally we leverage, where we signal and say that as a female, also, you're automatically very disempowered.
Right. Well, the percentage, I think, is like 75% of people that are narcissistic are males, 25% are females. And you have to think about it. The way that we talk to kids and raise young boys is suck it up, be a man. Men don't cry.
Yeah.
Men don't show their emotions. You know, if you show vulnerability, you're weak. All these messages we give young boys is so damaging. And how we don't allow open communication, like talking about your feelings is bad. It's taboo, you know, and let's be honest, how many more women read self-help books than men do? More women go to therapy than men do. And all of it has to do with what was modeled to us, the messages we received, and how we were conditioned growing up. Because there's nothing wrong with therapy. There's nothing wrong with vulnerability. There's nothing wrong with, you know, crying or showing your feelings or saying what you need. To me, that's healthy. All of us should say what I like and what I dislike. What, you know, this hurts my feelings. This, you know, doesn't hurt my feelings. We need to be more, we've seen that. We need to just be more kind to each other. But when you can't, when kindness is thought of as a weakness, it's not making the world a better place.
Narcissistic abuse is not widely understood, yet it is frequently prevalent. The abused feeling their world's turned upside down, with them again struggling to understand. More often than not, it takes years of pain and confusion to understand how deep and complex narcissism is. Suddenly, you realize why it's so painful and frustrating to deal with that person. Your mother, your father, or your partner, nearly anyone, who's constantly criticizing and blaming you for everything, even when it's clearly their fault. Yet you were carrying the fears and insecurities that were never really yours. Fears and insecurities that were projected onto you by someone who wasn't empowered with the necessary skills to deal with their childhood interactions. Sometimes, understanding narcissism makes you realize you're not the problem. Yet in reality, as difficult as it is to grasp, sometimes these tables are turned. The victim becoming the victimizer. We'll tell you how when we return on The Light Inside. When it comes to mobile service providers, with their high rate plans, extra fees, and hidden costs or expenses, many of the big name networks leave a bad taste in your mouth. Mint Mobile is a new flavor of mobile network service, sharing all the same reliable features of the big name brands, yet at a fraction of the cost. I recently made the change to Mint Mobile, and I can't believe the monthly savings, allowing me to put more money in my pocket for the things which truly light me up inside. Making the switch to Mint Mobile is easy. Hosted on the T-Mobile 5G network, Mint gives you premium wireless service on the nation's largest 5G network. With bulk savings on flexible plan options, Mint offers 3, 6, and 12-month plans, and the more months you buy, the more you save. Plus, you can also keep your current phone or upgrade to a new one, keep your current number or change to a new one as well, and all of your contacts, apps, and photos will seamlessly and effortlessly follow you to your new low-cost Mint provider. Did I mention the best part? You keep more money in your pocket. And with Mint's referral plan, you can rescue more friends from big wireless bills while earning up to $90 for each referral. Visit our Mint Mobile affiliate link at thelightinside.us/sponsors for additional mobile savings, or activate your plan in minutes with the Mint Mobile app. There is evidence to suggest that people with narcissistic personality disorder play the victim in their behavior, often approaching life from a me against the world perspective. Why do people with NPD like to play the victim? In part, it's how people with narcissistic patterns view interpersonal interactions. A 2020 study suggests that a sense of victimhood or entitlement is a common trait of NPD. Narcissistic defenses, like all defenses, operate unconsciously. Dr. Romani Dervasella, a clinical psychologist based in Los Angeles and author of two books on narcissism, tells us, "Victimhood is a form of blame shifting. It allows the ego to remain intact, to blame the world, and in some cases, to get validation perhaps from other aggrieved people or even people who wish to rescue them. Yet what happens when these tables are turned and the victim becomes the victimizer? As both parties begin to exhibit narcissistic traits. Turning our attention to when interpersonal conflict arises, can we often disregard the possibility, or is it a possibility, that both parties may be exhibiting narcissistic traits or be in full-blown narcissism?"
Yes, that's a very good question.
Although maybe rare, does that happen?
Well, there is something called secondary narcissism. Hmm. Yeah. And a lot of times victims do become temporarily narcissistic.
Yes.
They do. And so that narcissistic abuser is now dealing with someone that is temporarily narcissistic, and they're fighting with each other. And so we're diving into it. Yeah.
And it becomes that kind of slippery slope of stigma now.
Yes.
That we might often maybe be unaware of. I shudder to say neglect, because that insinuates that we're doing it intentionally. It's often under-recognized. There it is.
Well, it's
now that might come into play.
Yeah, I think when someone becomes, temporarily narcissistic, it becomes a self-defense mechanism.
Yes,
you're trying to protect yourself, and you've had enough abuse. And so you are angry and you are lashing out at your abuser. And sometimes, like that cut the narcissist gave you, you're bleeding your wounds upon everybody else. And it does trickle out onto your friends and onto your family, onto your coworkers. And a lot of people can be like, "I don't know who you are anymore." And the thing is when you're a victim of that psychological abuse, it really does fry the circuits in your brain. You are not yourself.
You've essentially kowtowed to that path of gaslighting that then does shift your reality, that then does shift you into that cognitive dissonance.
Yes. And I remember struggling with cognitive dissonance myself, because it's like, did they really just do that? Did they really just say that? And you think in your mind, you know, well, they were so loving and so kind and this and that when I met them, but that was just a facade to get you hooked. You know, that's why love bombing is so damaging, is they come off as perceiving as someone else. And when the mask starts to slip and the behaviors start to come out, that really does create that cognitive dissonance, because you're questioning, are they really narcissistic or are they really this kind, loving person? It messes with your mind, because we don't want to think of someone as being evil and destructive and narcissistic. We want to give them the benefit of the doubt.
You know, there was a little intention in that kind of probing, searching questions of, might both parties be simultaneously exhibiting those narcissistic traits? Are there times when these narcissistic patterns then verge on becoming maybe vindictive or emotional vigilantism? It's a little bit loaded.
It is a little bit loaded, but I think a lot of it has to do with self-awareness and self-control, because all of us know that all of us have that trait inside of us where we can become evil. Let's be honest. When it's like life or death, or you feel completely threatened, all of us have the ability to turn into someone that we would never think possible. I mean, we've heard of women where their kids are trapped underneath a car, and to save that child's life, they lift the car up. And sometimes someone breaks into your house and you never thought that you would shoot a person, but you did in self-defense. And so we all are capable of doing things that goes beyond our normal characteristics and behaviors. And the key thing is when we start to display those behaviors that are damaging, destructive, and questionable, I feel that's when we need to do a self-inventory. We really need to look at, why am I acting this way? Why am I speaking this way? Why am I behaving this way? Who might be bringing the worst out in me? What's triggering this to happen within me? And really do some self-exploration. And sometimes asking friends and family members, because those are the ones that are going to see you change the most. And it is hard. Trust me, it's hard when someone you know loves you has to say to you, you know, yeah, you have been irrational. Yeah, you have been narcissistic lately. Yeah, you have been lashing out in anger. And all of those are PTSD, I say, warning signs. You could have hidden trauma and you don't even realize that all those behaviors you've been displaying is a sign of hidden trauma.
Bring that up as an aside, based on research conducted by the University of Illinois Department of Psychology, that suggests that abuse victims often utilize it as a form of empowering or vindictive tool to regain that sense of positive self-regard at the expense of being narcissistic themselves. I'm going to leave that hanging out, I feel, today, because that's a left turn into another episode.
Oh, no, that's beautiful.
That's a great way to frame it. You know, that leaves us open for further future exploration.
Yeah.
As we near the end of our conversation today, Angela, you speak of that technique you call the end game strategy. Share with us a little bit about that framework and how that begins to come into play.
So the end game is realizing that the person is trying to get you to snap. They're really pushing the boundaries. They're pushing you over the edge, and you can feel yourself slipping into that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn mode. And those are the behaviors that have to do with your limbic brain, your survival. You know, it's, you're going to make an irrational choice. And so I want people to first recognize that, hey, this is reactive abuse, whether it is going to be physical or going to be verbal. You got to recognize that it is reactive abuse and it is a tactic to get you to snap. Okay. And so what I want people to do is, first, I need them to do a redirection. Okay. You either need to walk away from the abuser, say, I need to use the restroom. You got to come up with something, because they're going to keep pushing you and pushing you. So you have to create distance. So once you can create distance and you can possibly walk away or redirect or change the subject, that's where I want people to, if they can, I say, go to the bathroom, just close the door. It's that space. Calm down. There is a calm down technique you can do where you put one hand behind your neck, the other hand on your forehead. You want to do it when you're sitting down. You really control your breathing, and you breathe in, you can breathe in for the count of five, breathe out for the count of five, but you do it at least 10 times to get grounded, more centered. Then you need to ask yourself, what is the end game? Go over the conversation in your mind. What is this person trying to do? What are they asking of you? And what can possibly be the consequences of your actions? And if you're a person that's into that please and appease mode, the best thing I say is don't agree. Don't say yes, because that's your auto response, knee-jerk reaction. Say, let
agree
me think
to disagree.
About it. Yeah. Agree to disagree. Say, let me think about it. Let me think about it. Yeah. Mm. Really say, let me think about it. Just say, you know what? I'm not in the mood right now to think about it. You know, let me think about it. And that can just be your response. Let me think about it. Let me think about it. Let me think about it. Instead of saying yes, let me think about it. But really look at the end game, because you can find yourself in a situation where you know they're going to win. And sometimes if you realize they need a win, then give them the win. And the win could be, yes, you're right. I was stupid. Mm-hmm. Even though you know you're not stupid, even just letting them have that small win, if it saves you from snapping, do it. Because it can be used against you, literally used against you. So you can agree, like, yes, you were right. I was stupid in that. And just to get them off your back. Because the thing is if you keep pushing and pushing and you fight and you push back, then they can say, well, see, she pushed me. She was the abuser, or he was the abuser. And then you find yourself in this whole can of worms. So the end game technique is really creating distance, calming yourself down, and thinking of the end game. What are the consequences of my actions if I do this? If I don't do that, what can happen? What is the conversation? Will I spend jail time if I do that? Will I lose custody of my kids if I say this? It's really, really dissecting it in your cortex brain, where you have that rational thinking instead of irrational.
I want to thank you for sharing such a relevant, pertinent insight. Hopefully this in-game technique helps us come a little closer to an end of the confusion we often feel when dealing with narcissistic abuse. Namaste, the light in me acknowledges the light in you. This truly has been such an amazing, fascinating chance to learn and discover more about this pertinent topic.
Thank you for having me today. I truly appreciate you, and I want you to have a great, great
rest. I'm so grateful. Thank you. Have a great day. I know you have to run.
I do. You take care.
Take care. We'll talk soon. Be blessed.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Narcissistic abuse is unique in the way it damages people, because it literally wounds the soul. The ravages of narcissistic abuse are deep-seated and often lifelong. The pain and struggle are both real and often enduring, leaving us feeling like we're caught in that never-ending fight. Narcissistic abuse can be so subtle that it's difficult to notice when it's happening, which incidentally is why many people stay connected with their abusers for so long. Once you do realize what is happening, the damage often already done. Yet as we shared today, there is an end game within sight. It can take years to fully recover from the damage that was done because of the psychological manipulation that you have endured. That being said, moving past the abuse and fully recovering is entirely possible with professional help. We hope you found value and meaning in this short series on narcissism. Please share it with a friend, loved one, or anyone else you feel might benefit from this insight. And as always, we're grateful for you our valued listening community. This has been The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker.